I want to take a few minutes with you to impart to you some things that I have learned in my lifetime about copywriting that's going to change the way you write forever. I want to explain what I'm doing here. I have two goals. My first goal is to help you as much as I can. My second goal is to make myself transparent. But don't worry about taking notes, because at the end of our talk, I'm going to tell you how to get all the notes on what I'm talking about here today. That this is a mystical experience which we undergo every so often. Now, I don't know whether you've tried it. It's marvelous. If you work with a computer, a good computer, lots of bytes, you can say to the computer, solve this problem for me. When it does, you can then say, make yourself transparent to me. How did you solve this problem? Then the computer will then go back every step and show you how it reached its solution. The computer cannot lie. It doesn't have that circuit built in. We have a very large number of lying circuits built into us. Now, what I'm going to try to do is take the lying circuits and move them over here and be transparent. That means I'm going to answer any question, give you all the information I can completely and honestly. And we'll see how that works, because that's the only way I can possibly impart anything of value to any of you. Now, I know you're extremely fine professionals, and much of what I say for the first 10 minutes is going to be too elementary for you. But I cannot discuss anything unless I go over the very, very, very beginning. Okay, this is a timer. It is the most valuable thing I ever bought in my life. I go nowhere in the world without a timer. Whenever I do anything, I press in 3333. That means 33 minutes and 33 seconds. I then press the start button. Now, we're going to speak for 33.33 minutes. Now, why do I do this? Because I don't think anyone can work for a very long period of time without interruption. And if you do, you exhaust yourself too quickly. When a posse used to chase a criminal out west where I come from, Butte, Montana, the horse thief would ride for an hour, and then he'd get off and walk the horse for an hour. And then he'd get on the horse again and ride. And the posse would ride for an hour behind him, get off the horse and walk an hour and then ride. Why wouldn't the posse go faster? Because the horse would be exhausted and drop dead. Okay, your mind has a way of dropping dead on you. So what we do is we give it this 33.33 minutes. And this gives us room for inspiration to sneak in. Okay, that's number one. Number two is the fact that I come from Butte, Montana. Now, you probably come from a lot of different places rather than this particular place. I was very fortunate to be born in Butte, Montana. It's a very small town of 30,000 people. I grew up there. I left when I was 15. I live in Manhattan. I mean, I lead an extremely sophisticated life in Manhattan. I never try to lose the Butte, Montana in me, because the Butte, Montana in me is everybody in this huge country of ours. Now, I don't know how many of you read the National Enquirer every week. I don't know how many of you go to every film that makes over $100 million and see every one of them. You cannot lose touch with the people of this country, no matter how successful or how potent you are. If you don't spend at least 2 hours a week finding out where your market is today, you are finished. You will have a career of 3 blazing years and be finished. Now, here is a summary of Gene Schwartz's rules of great copywriting. These are, in fact, the 8 rules of great marketing and great editorial. And yes, Schwartz says these are rules, so I'll expound upon them. Number one, Be the best listener you ever met. Number two, work extremely intensely in spurts. Three, never create. Know the product to the core and combine the details in new ways. Number four, write to the chimpanzee brain simply, directly. Five, channel demand. Never sell. Number six, think about what your product does, not is, and demonstrate this. Number seven, make gratification instantaneous. And eight, failing often and testing big differences shows you are trying hard enough. So go and get in touch with your people. Don't lose that. Talk to every cab driver you meet. Speak to everyone you can. Be the best listener you ever met. Talk little, listen much. That is your market talking. You don't have to have great ideas if you can hear great ideas. Can someone get me a glass of water? Thank you, sweetheart. Marty Edelson is the owner of Boardroom Incorporated. He came to me with $3,500 in his pocket, and I told him I'd have to charge him $2,500 as a copy fee, which embarrassed the devil out of me, but didn't bother him at all. And he said, okay, what do we do? And I said, well, we can start it right now. I'm going to sit, and I'm going to listen, and you're going to talk. He talked for about 4 hours about this crazy concept of having a thing called Boardroom, a newsletter called Boardroom. And I just sat there, like you're sitting there right now, taking notes. And when he said things, I just took it down. And about 30 minutes into it, he said one sentence. And I took it down, and then we were finished. And I said, well, thank you. And he said, when can you have the copy for me? And I said, about 2 weeks. He walked out. I went home. Now, my wife takes a long time to make up. While she did that, I wrote the ad. I put in the ad from stem to stern. I couldn't give it to him the same night because you would think it was worth nothing. So I put it away for 2 weeks. And in 2 weeks, I sent it to him and he ran it. Now, my copy was 70% his conversation. The headline was, how to get the heart of 370 business magazines in just 30 minutes a month. It was his thing. It was his idea. It was his conception. It was his vision. All I did was write it out and give it to people. Okay. You must be in contact with your market. You must listen. You must let the ideas come to you. If you don't let the ideas come to you, you're going to rely too much on your own creativity. These are all fundamentals. The number one rule of success in anything, marketing, football, which I'm going to talk about a lot today, chess, etc., is work. And it's so funny. It's so easy to say, work, 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 work. But I have to emphasize that to you. I work at home. I have no boss. I've never had one since the second year I was in business. I'm a West Coast person who doesn't relate very well to the East Coast clock. So every morning, I get up about 10, and by 10:30 or 11, I'm ready to go to work. I work every single day of the week. I work on Saturdays and Sundays, too. I have never had a writer's block, an editorial block, or any other kind of block. I create 12 to 15 mailing pieces a year. I never have any trouble getting started on them. I work between 3 and 4 hours a day. I work extremely intensely. I'll tell you how I managed to get the work combined with creativity. Very simple. And I have an 85% 80% hit ratio. That means 85% of the ads I write pay out. Now, I am of the opinion that the absolutely most talented copywriter in the world, who doesn't work very much, will be beaten by a copy cub who puts in four times as much work because the creativity is not in you. Never mistake that. The creativity is in your market and in your product. And all you are doing is joining the two together. And the only way you can get the creativity out of your product and your market is to dig it out. And the only way you can dig it out is dig it out more than anybody else digs it out. I'm better result-wise than many good copywriters who are better writers than I am because I work harder than they do. And I can actually see the gaps in their working. Now, let me explain that. We have what I call the Super Bowl of copy. I use football metaphors because they are apt. And I hope everybody here understands them. But if you don't, I'll translate them into other metaphors. But they work very well for me. Now take Rodale. Is this mic working? Can you hear me okay? Okay, that's better. Rodale made $315 million in sales last year. It should come close to $400 million this year. That's just Rodale Books. A very good company. It's done many innovative things. Produces excellent books, etc., etc. They hire two copywriters for every single new book they do. The two copywriters are sent the manuscript of the book, and they write ads. Now, you can call them mailing pieces or anything else. I call them ads because I like to use short words. We then submit the two pieces. They are laid out by Rodale's layout department. They send the copywriters a sort of preliminary layout. Then the artist and I talk about it, fix it up, get it right. It's sort of a Super Bowl because these are the highest paid copywriters in America. We all get lots of money. I have done that four times this year so far. It's not a Super Bowl where it's once a year. It keeps going all the time. And you keep running up against these terribly, terribly, terribly great writers. To compete in it, I read the Rodale book. 700 pages, four times. I underline the book so intensely that I get 40 or 50 pages of notes out of these readings. Those notes are then sent out to a secretary, and she types up those notes, so I get a precise vocabulary. I then go over the vocabulary and begin structuring an ad. Now, we'll talk much more about it in a few minutes. When I am finished, I am working on the copy. I know more about the book than the editor who has produced it. Because many times at Rodale, they'll come back to me and say, Ed, this is not correct. This is too exaggerated. And I will say, I combined something from page 116 and with 531. And the editor goes back and says, oh, yeah, okay, it can be done. Now, find your reader's hidden desires. They are hidden because your reader doesn't want to really talk about them. But they are in the subculture, hidden culture, underculture of our civilization. That's why you've got to read the things that people buy. Anything that people buy. Vanity Fair. You've got to read Vanity Fair. You won't know what's going on unless you read Vanity Fair, the People magazine, the Weekly World News. I don't know whether you are advocates of the Weekly World News. You've got to read that because it shows the extent of people's ability to believe. When you start working on the project, you go to the person who has initiated the project and you listen. You listen two ways. A person in books and publishing has probably done a lot of words on paper, so you read those. And then, if you can, you sit down with him and you just kind of turn on the tape recorder and you listen, listen, listen. Nobody's going to know more about it than you. Then you listen to people every single day of your life. You're paid to listen. It's a very bad profession. Very lonely profession. Because it gives you almost no chance to brag or talk about yourself. You really listen. Martin Edelson gave me a headline and a theme for a whole new series of books, which we have not even prepared yet because he said something at lunch the other day. You listen. You pick up ideas from people. That's where they are. If you get them talking, they will come out. Because I have to know that product right down to its core in order to get every single sales appeal out of it. I work harder. And therefore, I make 85% winners. Okay. I guess the best guys are much better writers than I am. I'm really not that good. I haven't got their flair. Jim Punk was 100 times better than I am. So you work. You work. You work. You work. You leave nothing out. No step undone. What the client gives you may be inadequate. If it is, you challenge the client. You have no client but the audience. You really don't care about anything but the market or the process. When I'm finished, I send my copy in. He sends his copy in. She sends her copy in, whoever it is. The ads run. Direct mail pieces are mailed out. And I get a report back from Rodale, and they say, you outpulled Jim Punkra 146% on one ad, and he outpulled you 31% on another. You then get his copy, his mailing piece, as well as your own mailing piece. You then go over in great detail his approach and compare it with your own approach. It's a very good way to learn. Very humiliating. Very enlightening. I can see where they didn't do enough work. I can see where they lost facts. And the loss of those facts stands out so clearly because I had the facts. They didn't have the facts. Usually, I win. When you're dealing with someone of real brilliance, and they do a headline that's absolutely beyond all belief, then you are going to have a hard time. Probably you're going to lose then, no matter how many facts you have. But nevertheless, 70% of the time, if the facts aren't there, they'll hurt you. It's exactly as if you don't have a piece of concrete in your building and it collapses. These are fundamentals, but they are universally applicable. If you don't get in the facts, you're just not going to do a top job. When you marshal the facts, you then begin writing the copy. Now, we are especially privileged people, all of us, because we are working in publishing. And what is given to you is not a product, but words. You've got a constant flow of words that you are investigating. So much of your copy is already written for you. So, you start with their copy and your comments and additions and inspirations from their copy. And it's there on these 40-some pages. In your computer, on your screen, and you start at the very top and you work your way down sentence by sentence and paragraph by paragraph by paragraph. Very easy. Let's talk about the value of it being easy. Many very brilliant writers, as well as other workers in all fields, physical and especially intellectual, have trouble getting started. They have what is probably known as a writer's block, which is a Western phenomenon and does not occur much in the East. In Zen Buddhism, for example, it doesn't occur at all. Why does it occur? occur here and not occur there? It's very simple. Zen Buddhists, about 4,000 years ago, invented a very simple way to make sure you get down to work and to make sure you don't have a block. What happens when a Zen, or if, well, let's say me, I'm partially Zen, starts to work? What he does is he takes out the piece of copy and he calls it up on the computer. That is the vocabulary. All those little quotes. He then takes out a cup of coffee. The same cup of coffee every day. He swirls it around and mixes the sugar. Mixes the cream and swirls it around. He then takes out a pad and a pencil and puts it exactly the same space. He's not doing anything very much. Then he takes out a little timer and punches in 33.33. He puts in 33 minutes and presses the start button. When I press the start button, I can do anything I want. All willpower is dissolved. I can't do anything I want as long as it relates to the piece of copy in front of me. I can't ignore it. I don't have to touch it. I don't have to look at it. But I can't get up from the desk, and I can't do anything except ignore or relate to the piece of copy. I am not trying to write a wonderful ad. I am not trying to earn an extra $1 million. I am not trying to do anything. I have no goal whatsoever as to what that particular piece of copy is going to do for me. All I know is that I'm going to work on the copy, and I have no responsibility to the client, the copy, the prospect, the market, myself, and my future except to work. So finally, after a good deal of looking around, and I can't get out of the chair now, I'm trapped in that chair for 33.33 minutes. I get bored. So, what do? I start reading down the copy. And as I start reading down the copy says to me, "Oh, hey, aren't I beautiful? Why don't you pull me out and put me on top? Or, why don't you change this phraseology? It's extremely ineptly put. Why don't you put it into advertising terminology?" So what happens is that I begin to get into it. And within about 5 minutes, I am working on the copy, making the ad from the copy. Okay, no block, because I am really not doing very much at that time. And so we are going to have to start subdividing them into categories. The categories are going to become your letter, your flyer, and in a Magalog, they're going to become one page. So you begin to sort it out, and you begin to get it. As you sort things out into categories, things leap out at you. When they leap out at you, you capture them at the moment. The computer has a thing called a highlighting device, the bold key. You hit the bold key, and you make them into a headline or a subheadline. They are the points of contact, the most dramatic points of contact you have with your prospect, with your market. I hope you can all see this ad. It says, "Burn disease out of your body." Crazy. A really wild piece written in 1979. The full headline is, "How Modern Chinese Medicine Helps Both Men and Women Burn Disease Out of Your Body Using Nothing More Than the Palm of Your Hand." Okay. This ad has been running for 14 years now, selling the book, which sold for $6.95 when it first ran and sells for $33 now. It will sell more copies this year than it ever did before, and we paid the author well over $1 million. I wrote it as a special favor for the author because he had done a special favor for me. He gave me back the use of my right hand after I had my stroke. I paid $125 for the layout. It's as crude as can be. I never thought the thing would sell. Layout, letter, very crude, very small type, a lot of violations. We are going to go over this in some degree of thoroughness later on. I couldn't get anybody to run it, so I started my own business to run it. And there I was. Okay. burn disease out of your body lying flat on your back using nothing more than the palm of your hand are not my words. They're the author's words. I wrote 7 paragraphs of this letter. But I had the ability to let this man speak for himself, and he still speaks to millions of Americans. We are mailing more in January than we mailed for the first 8 years of the mailing. And it goes against very, very strong, 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 wonderful copy, including your own copy. And it still continues to do well. That just about finishes the fundamentals. After 33.33 minutes happen, this thing goes crazy and rings all over the place. You stop. You push the stop button. You don't do anything from that moment on. If you are in the middle of a sentence, you really leave that sentence go. If you lose it, you lose it. That's too bad. You are under the command of something higher than you. It's so funny to use these metaphors. You pull yourself and push yourself back. You stand up. You now have 5 minutes of compulsory leisure. You are not to create anymore. You are not to work anymore. You have 5 minutes. Now, coffee low? We'll have to make a new cup. Dog? Play with the dog. Go shave, if you're a man, of course. Okay. You do something. You see, you have to do something, but you can't work. You have to engage your mind. You have to engage your intelligence. But you can't engage your mind or your intelligence on what you've been doing. Why? Because you are about to create. You have been working until that point. Now you are about to create. Now, let's talk about creation. How does one create? How does one become creative? How does one get new ideas? How does one solve problems that are intractable and cannot be solved? That you've worked on for weeks and thrown your hands up in despair. Well, that again is quite simple. We'll take a few minutes on this because it's really so valuable and it's so much a habit that can become cultivated and then become rather automatic and give you a statistical proportion of hits. That means new ideas in this case. Your conscious mind is actually your focus of attention. The conscious mind is absorbed with what you are paying attention to. I'm paying attention to all of you when I'm speaking at this particular moment. Your conscious mind can only hold about 7 memory bytes. That's pretty small, so you have to focus. Your conscious mind is where you focus your attention. Very narrow. It's wonderful. It's fantastic for working out syllogisms, consequences, etc. It will not create for you. What is creation? Creation is a lousy word. It's a lousy word that confuses what you really do to perform a simple little procedure. Creation means create something out of nothing. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth. Okay. Only God can do that. We can't do that. We're human. So let's throw creation out, and let's talk about connectivity. What you are trying to do is connect things together. You're trying to practice connectivity. You're trying to get two ideas that were separate in your mind and culture before, and you are trying to put them together so they are now one thought. You want something new to come out. But it doesn't mean it never existed before. It means never joined before. New, in every discipline, means never joined before. You've got to trick that conscious mind because that conscious mind isn't big enough to connect all these widespread phenomena. So what you do is you take your conscious mind and you focus it on making a new cup of coffee. That holds it there. And then ideas can kind of bleed into the back of your mind and can come into the front of your mind. The best example is Mozart, most creative man, who was writing symphonies at 6, 7, 8. I don't know whether you saw the movie Amadeus. It shows very truthfully how very well he wrote. He never, ever rewrote. He never changed. He wrote his scores in pen, ink. Never changed a note of them. rid of his genius, of course, but that doesn't mean a thing. How did he do it? Well, he did it very simply. He composed at a billiard table. He would stand at the billiard table, and he would have a single white billiard ball. He would have a pen and an inkwell, and he would have the score. And he would take the white billiard ball in his left hand while he had the pen in the right hand, and he would throw the white billiard ball out against the three cushions, and it would bounce off the three cushions. It's random how it comes back to a certain extent. It never comes back exactly at the same place. So he had to focus on the trajectory of the billiard ball until it came back. When it came back here, or here, or here, he had to focus on that hand being in exact right place. Meanwhile, while his conscious mind was over here, his unconscious mind slipped the note back to him, and then he had the next note. Every note was a billiard ball traveling. Every note was a distraction. Every note was an addition. You've got to break out of that conscious prison to be unconsciously creative, which means to connect unconsciously things that haven't been consciously connected before. My greatest inspirations or creations come when I'm shaving. I am the poorest shaver. Cut myself continually, and I'm always running back and forth between the bathroom and my desk. They're right next to each other because I have to get it down before it slips away. I'll draw one of my great connections for you. A very successful ad. It says, 71-year-old man has sexual congress 5 times a day. Problem? This was a sexual health product. There are many sexual health problems and health products around. Everybody constantly talks about super potency, etc., etc. They all say you could gain back everything you had. How is that going to compete in a market with a very simple, very crude failing piece? And I found I could do it by 2 ways. Number one, I used sexual congress, which is a very strange way of phrasing this particular act, but which was a very typically American way in the 1890s. And number two, I talked about a 77-year-old man when I'm selling products to 40-year-old men. I gave the extreme. I did not think of this. I had no idea of thinking of this. It came to me, in fact, when I was shaving. I put it down, and it pulled 9% of the first test. Okay. Those are the fundamentals. Let's go over them again. The first, most dominant, absolutely incontrovertible, and indispensable fundamental is that you work harder than anybody else. Therefore, you make more money than anybody else. A one-to-one connection. Red Blake, the coach of Army during World War II, great coach, said the will to win depends on the will to prepare.
This is the end of part one. Please continue to part two. Here's a tip. If you're listening to these audio recordings in MP3, here's a way where you can listen through the content twice as fast and still be able to absorb all the information. What you want to do is you want to go to a website and download a free trial of goldwave.com, GOLDWAVE.com. Now, this is an audio file editor, and one of the features on this editor is it allows you to play the audio recordings at any speed you want. So you can have it speed up to where it sounds like you're listening to the chipmunks where their voices are real high. But I do a lot of editing of audio recordings, and I find when I'm doing the editing, you're still able to listen to audio content about twice the speed of normal language. And it takes a little bit of practice, but you can fly through audio content. So if you like to learn by audio and you want to listen to content and you don't mind listening to the different higher pitch voice, it's a very effective way of getting through content twice as fast.